Now let's turn to another analysis of the debt ceiling deal. Joining us now is Michael Tomasky, who is special correspondent for Newsweek and The Daily Beast and editor of Democracy, a Journal of Ideas. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Tomasky.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be with you.
And in the introduction to the program, I suggested here that we're going to talk to you about strategy or the lack thereof in the White House that allowed a minority of Tea Party zealots to shape national policy, stall economic recovery, and impoverish millions of Americans. Is that hyperbole on my part?
No. I second the motion, sir.
Well, how did this happen?
Well, as you suggest, there are many and complicated reasons why the White House isn't very good at this, and I think those reasons begin with the fact that the president just has a sort of philosophical distaste for hardball. But we could go into that in detail if you want. But what it amounts to is that there were, as you suggested, as you were introducing me, several opportunities for Obama and this White House to map out a different strategy that I think would have resulted in a very different conclusion here. I'll just start with one and then yield the floor back to you. But this really goes back to last December when he agreed to extend all the Bush tax cuts for all income brackets. There were people writing back in December and saying, arguing, pundits, commentators, policy specialists, and so forth, who were saying, at that time, last December, he should make the Republicans accept a clean debt bill in exchange for extending the Bush tax cuts, because people saw this coming. Well, if these people saw this coming, why didn't the White House see it coming?
Well, it at that time, by the way, I understand that Schumer had made a deal that the Republicans thought was okay. That is, that to extend the cuts, but not for the people earning above $2 million?
Above $1 million.
Was it above $1 million, was it?
I think that's right. And the White House wouldn't go for that either. And there's no reason that this $250,000 number is set in stone. I mean, it's only been the number since the Bush administration. It doesn't have to be the number.
Right.
There are a lot of different ways to do this sort of thing. But, I share your frustration with their lack of strategic sense. And then just another example that has been boggling my mind the last couple of days is this whole 14th Amendment business. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with the basic contours of that. Well, Obama himself and Jay Carney, his press person, both said in recent weeks that they felt that that this 14th Amendment option and raising the debt ceiling unilaterally was not viable and not something that they could do. Okay, fine, but actually not fine, but hypothetically fine. But even if you don't think that that's something that you can do, why say that?
Why take it off the table? Yeah.
Why? You've got to. It's negotiating 101. Make the other guy think you might do it. I mean, What was that? Unbelievable.
Well, President Clinton even suggested they invoke it. And let's face it, Michael Tomasky, it was put in the Constitution after the Civil War because there was a concern that the Dixiecrats could take over the Democratic Party and renege on the South's debts. And they put it in the Constitution that you cannot mess with the debt ceiling for political reasons.
The similarities between that situation and this one are eerie and freaky if you really dig into them. You're quite right.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Tomasky, who is special correspondent for Newsweek and The Daily Beast and editor of Democracy, a Journal of Ideas. And one of the good friends of the White House, Andy Stern, I think he maybe was responsible for $75-80 million in 2008 in their coffers. I don't quite know the figures, but I know he helped elect President Obama, I think, by no means. He says quoting him, "We have now had at least three or more experiences of the president explaining to people that he has a plan and it's under control, but the results don't match. He has an unreasonable Congress that doesn't respond to reason, so why continue to reason with them?" Seems like a reasonable thing to say.
Well, you know, I wrote a column a couple of weeks ago. I think, if I may say so, it was a pretty good one, too. It was called The Untransformational President, if people want to Google it. But, you know, he always feels that he needs to be the reasonable person. And, you know, this phrase that they repeat over and over again, these White House people, the adult in the room. But, you know, sometimes adults get mad, and sometimes adults go send kids into the corner, and sometimes adults read the Riot Act, and sometimes adults, you know, do other things besides sit there and speak calmly like Mike Brady to the Brady kids. You know, that's not the only model of adult. That's probably lost on you, according to your accent.
No. we were victims of cultural imperialism. In Australia, we saw all the terrible American televisions. By the way, I know enough about this country. You know, I've been here long enough to become an American. There's an expression in America: "Nice guys finish last."
Yeah, that's right, a baseball expression, and you know, one that I think is coming into play here. I mean, there's no question that, you know, he got taken to the cleaners. Another expression by Mitch McConnell. You know, it is true. I'll have to say that, like, as I've looked over the details of the deal and certain things that are exempted, you know, Social Security and Medicaid and programs for the poor are exempted, I have felt less disgusted than I felt 36 hours ago. But that's as far as I'll go. I won't say better. I'll say less disgusted.
But Mitch McConnell, who you just mentioned, Michael Tomasky, he has now said that this is going to be their M.O., I mean, this is the man who said that his first priority is to make sure that President Obama is not reelected.
Oh, yeah.
He's the man who's been able to usurp power in the Senate by not allowing any majority of vote on anything, just about, arbitrarily setting the threshold to the filibuster-proof 60 margin. Yeah. Now he's saying that from now on, the Republic is going to tie the debt ceiling to revenue increases.
Yeah. Well, it's unbelievable. And as angry as I am at Obama for the way this turned out, people should keep their ire trained on Mitch McConnell. This is the first time in the history of the United States that a Senate opposition has threatened to filibuster a debt ceiling vote. First time. And it's really pretty unconscionable, like way beyond the norms and practices of that body. And people should keep that in mind, absolutely. And as for looking forward, I was struck by a quote I saw the other day, yesterday. John Barrasso on Fox News, I wasn't watching, I hasten to point out, it was brought to my attention, this quote. He said, "We consider this round one of a 15-round fight." And that's exactly how the Republicans are thinking of this. This is a huge, long fight. They're just starting. You know, liberals think these are people on the left think these are draconian cuts. This is nothing to the people on the right. They think this is pennies. They think they've just begun. This is what people have to keep in mind. And you know, when I hear liberals trying to defend this deal, saying, well, you know, when the super committee reports out, well, you know, we might get some tax increases and we might get some revenues. I think, what movie have you been watching for the last 2 years?
Indeed, the opposite is obvious, that if which is likely, the super committee doesn't get the votes, then there's a year interregnum where before the trigger mandates the automatic cut, and that will be the year of the lobbyist.
Yeah, that's right. And there's another little hidden thing here, too. And I'm a little fuzzy on the details on this yet. I'm trying to report this tomorrow, so I'm just going to speak a little generally about it. But you know how October 1st is the new fiscal year every year in the United States. And we were, before this, looking at another big budget fight in September. Now, there is some sense that this bill that passed the House tonight and presumably is going to pass the Senate tomorrow obviates that September budget battle. But there are reasons to think that because of the way they can manipulate the rules, the Republicans can do things that will make the Democrats make more cuts in September, which is just, you know, 7 weeks from now.
So just in the last minute or so then, Michael Tomasky, you don't think that that this is necessarily a wag the dog situation with the Tea Party wagging the Republican Party dog, that in fact this is really Republican policy and the Tea Party have just been kind of like the whip?
Yeah, that's right. I see them as much more unified. I think they're much more unified ideologically than some other people do. You know, the Republican Party has been a taxophobic party since Ronald Reagan, but especially since George Bush actually raised taxes in 1990. And you know, since I think this is true, I'm dead certain this is true. Since George H.W. Bush agreed to a tax increase in 1990. I don't think there's been a single Republican vote for a tax increase.
But the truth of the matter isn't, and I'm not sure that truth matters anymore in the post-Karl Rove environment where the truth is a moving target and he who manages and manipulates and spins it the best wins the argument. But just for the sake of a little objective reality here, the United States is about, I think, 30th or something in terms of its taxing versus its GDP. Vis-a-vis its GDP, so it's way down, way below all the other the European social democracies and other democracies in terms of its tax burden. So when the president made that pitch that this is all about protecting the millionaires and the billionaires, clearly the shame game didn't work.
Now, shaming a Republican is like, I don't know what it's like trying to do. Good luck with that. They're not going to raise taxes on the top 2%. It's not going to happen.
But what about the American people? Apparently the polls indicate that they're not happy with the disparity of wealth and the basic unfairness of what's happening.
They're not happy at all. I mean, I'm sure you saw the poll, the most astounding poll I've seen in 10 years. Was the one where they asked the people, you know, how much wealth does the top 10% own, and how much wealth should it own, and people's estimations of what the two answers to that were would be considered incredibly left wing, would be considered Karl Marx. You know, you should look up this poll. It's just amazing, amazing results. But what do the people really? What influence can they have? They don't make. Thousands and thousands of dollars worth of campaign contributions.
Well, Michael Tomasky, I think...
Bad situation.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Michael Tomasky, who is special correspondent for Newsweek and The Daily Beast and the editor of Democracy, a Journal of Ideas. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about unemployment and jobs, which is not a part of the debt ceiling deal.
Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring integration. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me